Brian McLean on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
All right, welcome back, everybody. Welcome back to the show. Thank you for joining me today. You're listening to today's News Talk. Today, in this final hour of the show, we'll be joined by Jonathan Hoffner, and we'll be talking about, well, rather than me summarizing, let's take his recent article for our news read to kick off this hour. I'll give you the opener, and then we'll introduce him. It's called The Pitfalls of Law Enforcement License Plate Readers in California and Safeguards to Protect the Public. In 2009, a 47-year-old black woman named Denise Green was forced to the ground at gunpoint by several San Francisco police officers during her car ride home from work. During the lengthy holdup, the officers searched Green's vehicle while other officers had their guns pointed at her while she was handcuffed. That seems unnecessary. Green had never had a criminal record. Her crime? The police alleged she was a car thief. But after an extensive detention, police acknowledged that Green's burgundy Lexus was, in fact, not the gray GMC truck they were looking for. Yeah. An automated license plate reader, or an ALPR, notified police that Green's car was stolen after misreading her license plate. The lesson of her story is that this could happen to anyone on the road. California law enforcement agencies have come to embrace ALPRs enthusiastically. ALPR systems gather information from passing cars faster than police officers can visually confirm license plates, and the systems compare the plate numbers against a registry, or they relay the plate numbers to dispatchers. ALPRs are high-speed cameras that can rapidly scan numerous computer-readable images, eliminating the need for law enforcement personnel to do manual checks. That's just the intro to this report written by our next guest, Mr. Jonathan Hoffner, posted at the Independent Institute. So if you want to check that out, I suggest you bring it up in your browser, share it around, have it available to read while we discuss this with Jonathan coming up. That's at independent.org. Do you have a suggestion for a possible guest you'd like to hear on TNT Radio? Or perhaps you have a topic you feel we should discuss? Then we want to hear from you. Simply complete the suggestion form on the TNT Radio website. Help us make a difference on TNT Radio.
Telling it like it is.
They're not afraid to be them.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
All right. Jonathan Hoffner is an Independent Institute Research Associate and author of the new report, which we just previewed there, The Pitfalls of Law Enforcement, License Plate Readers in California, and Safeguards to Protect the Public. Jonathan, welcome to the show. Thank you for joining me.
Thank you for having me. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, this is really fascinating. I'm excited to talk about this with you. I'm a California refugee residing in Texas currently, up here in Central Texas. And so go ahead and so I'm keenly interested in everything that happens back in my home state. So tell us about yourself, your background, how you came to get interested in this topic.
Yeah, my background, so I'm born and raised in Northern California. I've lived there my whole life. I'm originally from just south of the Oregon border, which is more of a conservative libertarian part of the state relative to the Bay Area where I currently reside. It's kind of in the neck of the woods of Mount Shasta, if you're familiar. It's also the home of the proposed state of Jefferson in my Siskiyou County. It's also right where the mill fire has most recently devastated the town of Weed, sadly. But I started becoming generally interested in government surveillance maybe 6-7 years ago. I was really inspired, I think, a lot by the Edward Snowden leaks. I think it was kind of my interest in technology combined with kind of my skepticism of maybe government power. This really kind of came to a head, though, when I was an undergraduate at UC Berkeley at the time. I was traveling with my brother Brian home to Oakland from our parents' house during Thanksgiving vacation. And Contra Costa sheriffs came up behind our car. They flashed their lights. At the time, we were observing all traffic laws to the best of our knowledge. We were kind of dumbfounded as to why, we're being pulled over. And eventually the sheriff's officer gets on his loudspeaker. He tells us to exit the freeway, which is the I-80 freeway. We find ourselves in like this very vacant Jack-in-the-Box parking lot. It's dimly lit. It's, you know, cold November evening. And kind of just holds us up there for a moment. And then about five or so other police cruisers show up. Six or seven officers come out. They all pull their guns out. They train them on us. They tell us to get out of the vehicle, you know, walk towards the sound of their voices and so forth. At some point, like, they tell me, hey, take six steps backwards and then take a few steps to my left. And I was following that. And then out of nowhere, I get tackled from behind. I have a gun put to the back of my head by one of the officers. And I don't know what precipitated that. I followed their instructions the best as I could. And I was really just really scared. And, you know, I didn't really know at the time, but I was pretty close to, you know, at any one of those, at any second, one of those officers could have pulled their guns or fired their guns. And about 45 minutes pass after me and my brother have been separated into different police cruisers. And after some time, they tell us, hey, we're sorry, but this car we thought was actually stolen. And it turns out that what happened was a different police department took a stolen vehicle report on that car, never actually updated the database of the stolen car registry. And so their license plate readers triggered the traffic stop. And then just by default, ALPR-related traffic stops are treated as a high risk or a felony stop, which is why they came out with their guns. And it's a very dangerous situation, not only for drivers, but also for police officers. If you kind of corner people into that situation, things can get, you know, quite volatile. And I think really the sad thing is that really this could happen to anyone. You mentioned kind of in your intro that case in San Francisco. You know, there's plenty of other cases like this. I list a few in that paper.
Just amazing, you know, and much like Ms. Green in that article there, pretty good judge of character. We got a good camera feed here. You don't look like a criminal type to me. you don't look like the kind of guy that's out there stealing cars. I know I shouldn't judge books by their covers, but yeah, you don't look like a high risk pullover to me. I mean, maybe you're black belt or something, but I don't see why they could tell that with their ALPR cameras. So I guess this goes wrong often. How often does this go wrong, and are there any tragedies? I mean, obviously, like you said, if you had, you know, even breathed in the wrong way, or someone sneezed who had his finger on the trigger, your life was in danger over this. Your life and your brother's lives were in danger over this stop, and it sounded pretty harrowing, you know. And then you get a oh, sorry about that. After 45 minutes, it took them 45 minutes to realize. And with Ms. Green's story, it's like, it's not even the same make and model or color of vehicle.
Right. Yeah.
I mean, at what point, this is like, you ever watch The Office? You see that episode where Michael and Dwight are driving and the GPS says, turn right, turn right.
Yeah,
and
they
drive right into a lake, you know, and it's kind of like we're letting the AI run things here, run us right into the water.
Right. Yeah. And that's kind of the perfect example right there in that it's not even the right make and model. So police are generally instructed, and this is usually pretty universal across departments in the U.S., but they're always instructed to manually check the license plate. But I think there's a couple of issues where either the officer thinks that maybe the suspect's getting away, so they want to pull over the suspect as early as they can, or they kind of just defer to the technology. It's like, hey, this thing's telling me that this person's a car thief. I better go investigate. And similar to that Denise Green case, there's another case that I referenced where this guy was coming home, I think in his like BMW, and the license plate reader flagged his vehicle, and the officer came over and pulled him over at gunpoint. And he was looking for an Oldsmobile of like two decades older. You know, It's also kind of funny. A lot of people don't realize that license plate numbers aren't unique in the United States. There's actually duplicates. It's not quite like a VIN number, which is almost like a serial number for a vehicle. Other states might have the same license plate you have, and the camera can't really differentiate that. It doesn't understand nuanced circumstances. That happened in Colorado, where this woman who was taking her nieces and I think a daughter to go get their nails done, she was driving in like a Dodge Caravan van, and they were in the parking lot. The nail salon was closed, and in the time it took them to walk back to their car, police had it surrounded. They put everyone in handcuffs at gunpoint, except for like the 6-year-old. And they're like, well, your car's stolen. And she was like, well, it's obviously not. And they never really figure out exactly why it was tripped up. But two possibilities were that the car was previously reported stolen, or the most likely scenario was that it actually matched the license plate of a motorcycle in Montana. So it was even the same kind of vehicle type.
A motorcycle. I mean, come on, guys. Geez. I mean, I can understand that whole, like, maybe they think their suspect is going to get away, but that's a pretty shoddy excuse for pulling someone over before you've even distinguished that, oh, this is not a motorcycle, or, oh, this is not an older model Oldsmobile. You know, I mean, this is a new BMW. I mean, these are the kind of things that the kind of checks that only take a moment. You know, you would think officers would follow their instruction, which is to manually check the plate. And I assume the make and model, that would maybe be helpful, considering we've got duplicate plates from different states that the computers can't deal with. It just sounds like there's a lot of potential for things to go wrong here. Cause like you said, there's nuanced circumstances, and these are like obvious nuances. These are the kind of things that you or I or any driver on the road would be able to pick up. You know, it's like, if I sent you out to look for a certain vehicle with a certain make and model and color, and you came back and you were like, I found your F-150. Here's a BMW motorcycle.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. And it's also kind of concerning. It not only is there just a problem with maybe the database isn't kept to date, these things are really bad at reading the alphanumeric characters on the license plates. So I think there's this kind of Fusion Center body in Northern California that's basically the largest collection of license plate data records that I'm aware of. And they cite that their cameras misread about one in every 10 cars, which is staggering amount, because a lot of the cameras that are connected to their network, they're over interstates. And, you know, these cameras can read upwards of 2,000 cars a minute. And, you know, maybe you don't have that much traffic, but you know, if they're misreading 200 cars every minute or so forth, that's potentially a lot of innocent people that get pulled over. And it gets even worse when you have low light conditions. Some people have obscured license plates. There's actually instances of where there's just bad faith too. One of the more gruesome stories that I've come across recently was, there was this case where there was this Oakland man, and he was, during the pandemic, he took up some gig work working as an Uber driver and Lyft driver. And I believe he started delivering, fast food too. And he was, contracting with a company that specializes in renting out cars to gig workers. And periodically he would run behind on his payments, and he would have to go talk to them and say, hey, I have your money at this date. And they worked out some agreement. And the language of their contract was that the rental car company would not report the car stolen unless very specific circumstances were met. This one time he was late on his payment. He called them up and said, hey, I'm going to be late. And unbeknownst to him, they reported the car stolen. and he gets picked up by a San Ramon license plate reader, and the San Ramon City Police pull him over. And he doesn't really speak English super fluently, so there's some communication problems, but they get him out of his car. And at that moment, a police dog instantly attacks him. And he's not really provoking police officers. He's, by and large, following their instructions. And the dog is allowed to basically chew through his entire right arm, up to the point where, as far as I know, he's still lost function in that arm. And it was just an instance of the car was mistakenly reported to as stolen. And so once you have one mistake, because these license plate readers use a common pool of shared data, when you upload one piece of bad information, then it spreads like wildfire, and it really has the chance of multiplying dangerous situations.
Yeah. Yeah, I could. That's a pretty insane case right there. That is not good. We're going to take a quick break over here, everybody, and we will be right back with Jonathan. We're going to talk about this some more. There's a lot to cover in here. His article is very detailed. And on the other side, we'll get into what exactly these cameras capture. We'll talk about the data sharing and some other items here that will be of interest to you, especially if you're in one of these municipalities that uses these cameras. They can misread 1 in 10 cars, folks. That is staggering. So over an interstate where 2,000 cars a minute are cruising, that could misread 200 of that 2K. That's pretty shocking right there, Jonathan. All right, hang with me. We're going to take a break. You're listening to today's News Talk.
You should hear what Mark Morano is talking about.
Food shortages, car shortages, digital surveillance, control over speech, movement, energy, and banking. Welcome to the Great Reset. And that's a pretty darn good coverage of what the Great Reset is. Food shortages, car shortages, digital surveillance, control over speech, movement, energy, and banking. And what the Great Reset really is, it's an attack on freedom of religion. If you think back with the lockdowns, shutting down churches, but Walmart was open. Freedom of assembly, the idea of social distancing, you can't gather, you can't congregate. And of course, free speech. Free speech is literally in our Constitution, the First Amendment. So in order to bypass the Constitution, they farm it out to big tech. And where this past week has been eye-opening, the Biden administration, Freedom of Information Act request against the Biden administration, against big tech, has shown unbelievable collusion between the Biden administration and big tech.
The Mark Morano Show on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
The story behind the biggest election takeover in history.
We're only now being able to finally confirm exactly how this worked.
Mark Zuckerberg and his wife are donating more money to local governments ahead of the election. $100 million on top of a $300 million gift.
The most money any individual has ever spent to win a presidential campaign in the history of our country.
The election was bought way before Election Day.
They stole it fair and square. They changed the voting rules in the middle of the game.
A nation divided, rigged.
It was a rigged election. People have to find out what happened.
At SalemNow.com.
Freedom of speech, freedom of movement, freedom of choice, freedom of assembly, freedom of health. The voice of freedom is TNT Radio.
Welcome back to the Brian McLean Show, everybody. I'm joined by Jonathan Hoffer. Jonathan is the author of The Pitfalls of Law Enforcement License Plate Readers in California and Safeguards to Protect the Public. Check that article out. That's what we're talking about today. You know, Jonathan, there's so many things that technology can bring us and has brought us. It's brought us the ability to have this conversation here and broadcast that out so everybody can hear it and at least understand some of the things that could be happening if they do get pulled over. I saw a case, I might have even reported about it here on TNT back when I first got started, but I saw a case where rental cars, people were having this problem with rental cars too. Hertz, I believe. I think it was Hertz Rental Agency. Sorry, Hertz, but I got to call you out here. They were reporting cars stolen sometimes that were not actually stolen, and people get pulled over. Like you said, you know, a mom going to cheerleading practice or, you know, something like that on travel. her and her kid get pulled out of the car, treated like they're car thieves, you know, like they've done Grand Theft Auto or something. And a lot of times the data is just wrong. The data has not been, you know, properly vetted and navigated, or there's been some sort of procedural red tape issue or an error in a database. And next thing you know, you're doing some, you know, your typical life, liberty, and happiness going about your day, and something like what happened to you can happen. So, what about these cameras? Like, what is there anything else that these cameras capture, or did we kind of just already cover how poorly they capture things due to variables?
Yeah. So, there's a couple important things that they kind of gather. Chiefly is that when you pass a camera or the camera scans your license plate, what it does is logging the time and place of the vehicle and other information about the car. So usually what it'll do, it'll give you a latitude and longitude and then give you the time of date. Sometimes if you have two cameras kind of in line with each other on a single road, you could deduce things like speed and direction of a car. And another thing is that as you're scanning, it's not just retaining kind of the alphanumeric characters of the license plate. What it's also doing is taking a series of pictures of your vehicle. It's recommended by ALPR manufacturers that a license plate to make a very legible and accurate, to the extent that they are accurate, reading of a license plate should take about 6 pictures of an incoming car. Sometimes it's more or less depending on conditions and speed of the vehicle. When a license plate reader takes a picture of the car, usually most of the car is visible to identify the vehicle from the image. Images that, or cars that are, maybe they have a unique bumper sticker, or maybe they have a paint job that stands out, rust, custom rims, things like that are really easy to identify from the pictures. Kind of interestingly enough, one of the things that's not really captured on most legacy cameras is the state that the license plate comes from, which is also, you know, a problem. As I kind of mentioned in that case in Colorado, what likely happened is that they were looking for a license plate for a motorcycle in Montana, not a Colorado license plate for a van. So, you know, it's one thing to collect these individual data points on people. It's another thing once you start aggregating them. Because one kind of point in time and one GPS location by itself really doesn't mean anything. It becomes more and more of a concern once you start getting a bunch of data points and then you're holding on to this data for a long time. The city of Los Angeles for a long time, actually maybe even today, I don't think they've changed this, they retain ALPR scans for 5 years. And in that time, if I have a rap sheet of where your car has been for 5 years and which camera they placed, I can create a very detailed portrait of your life. I can determine your travel patterns. I know where you like go at night. I know if you visit a place of worship. I know, you know, what bars you frequent, where you work. A lot of information can be gleaned from these kinds of data sets. And I think that's really the big concern is the time, date, and then aggregated images.
Yeah, that's a little bit disturbing. Now, who has access to this? Because someone out there might be listening and saying, well, you know, I'm blue line forever. Those guys could collect all they want. They make their mistakes and we try to do better. But and they may have an argument to make there, but not always. And it's my experience that anytime you have, like you said, long-term data aggregation that leads to the ability to paint a 3D picture of someone's physical movement or their politics online or their spending. And, you know, they get us with all this stuff. They're you know, you know this. You got interested in this because of Snowden, and you learned about Prism, and you probably learned about Palantir and how Palantir is essentially the giant database infrastructure that a lot of these sort of data systems feed into. Like, who's to say, and maybe you know the answer to this, but who's to say maybe this data isn't feeding that giant data center up there in Utah that the NSA runs, that collects everything and everything and everything, you know, and maybe they keep that data more than 5 years, maybe every 5 years or maybe every 5 seconds, this is dumping into their Prism and Palantir based databases up there or elsewhere. They may be going to corporate ones. They may be going, you know, so like, how far does the data sharing go? What can we expect there with regards to our privacy?
Well, that's really interesting because you mentioned Palantir. So Palantir actually did do the data brokering for LA for some time. They probably still do. So there's not a universal trend, but there's usually a couple different particulars. Many police departments don't collect their own license plate records nationally. That's not always the case. In California, like the California Highway Patrol has their own system. It's linked up with the California DMV. Other states do that similarly. That's not especially interesting in terms of, you know, data sharing. But you do come into a couple instances where similar to that place in Utah, there's also other fusion centers. One of them is in Northern California. It's more of an intelligence gathering body, I should say, not properly exactly what they're doing in Utah, but you could throw it under the same umbrella. It comes about kind of post 9/11, also in the wake and context of anti-drug force tactics and, you know, objectives. It's organized under the Department of Homeland Security. Their acronym is NICRIC. It's Northern California Regional Intelligence Center. And what they do is they're one of the largest aggregators of ALPR data in Northern California, which is probably the largest in the nation. And they gather it from several different sources. So that could be from local police departments. It could be their own acquisition of data. It could be from state DMVs. And it could also be from private companies who will they'll lease their own equipment to departments or to maybe a transit department. And then they'll sell the data back to the fusion center, or even to local departments. And this creates kind of a really bad no man's land, similar to the NSA and the things that Snowden brought up. People don't really have any, the local governments and the states don't really have any regulatory power over them and what they do in their own state. So the fusion centers kind of skirt local laws. They don't have to acknowledge or follow local ordinances. They're not really a federal department purely. They're not really a state department purely. They operate with questionable authority and really limited oversight. And once you have a centralized location of a lot of data, not only does it magnify the privacy concerns we were talking about earlier, but it also magnifies errors because, like I said, you're contributing to a shared database. And when that's not accurately updated or maintained, all the other departments are using that database. And so one error multiplies again. And what we see is that law enforcement agencies don't have the best track record in maintaining sensitive information like this. The state of California and a few others, I believe, New Hampshire, Oregon, Washington, and a few others, they have a lot of regulations on what their state agencies can do with certain types of technology that's gathered by law enforcement. And what the Cal State Auditor found in California, for example, is that none of the agencies that have ALPRs that they audited actually were following state laws. So they were combining records. Sometimes they had little or no cybersecurity measures for them. And one of the things that they bring up is like, hey, Palantir has access to all your data, but you never stipulated in their contract that they have to follow state law. And in fact, they're not even supposed to have access to this stuff. There is a few cases in Marin where it's like, you know, the system's not even being maintained by some guy in an IT department or anything. It's just some random guy that gives access to everyone. Sometimes officers will retain access to the databases after they've retired. Sometimes it's on unsecure networks. So you have a lot of things like that where it's just, it's ripe for abuse.
I got to stop you right there. As a former cybersecurity professional, I say no. Too many red flags, too many category one vulnerabilities here. This entire system is denied. I got to put the denial stamp on that as a cybersecurity subject matter expert. I do not approve of this. That would not pass the muster in any environment, much less one that could mass dox and leak PII to people that shouldn't get it. We're going to take a quick station break here. We'll be right back with Jonathan, everybody. We got a great conversation going here. If you have these ALPR cameras in your county, you might want to go to, you might want to start looking into it. This might be the kind of thing that should deserve some attention at a city council meeting coming up. All right. Maybe you want to get out there and represent that in your local area. All right. This is Today's News Talk, and we'll be right back.
This is James O'Neill with a check of today's headlines.
Russian President Vladimir Putin told an annual economic forum that European calls for a price cap on Russian gas were stupid and would lead to higher global prices and economic problems in Europe. Prime Minister Liz Truss gathered her new loyalist cabinet to finalize plans to freeze soaring energy bills as the Bank of England warned that inflation could hit 22% without action. She's formed a team stacked with her leadership backers.
At TNT Radio, we never go home. We're committed to bringing you our take on the biggest topics of our time. We broadcast live 24/7 online globally. No matter what, we've got you covered on TNT Radio.
That's right. Welcome back. The pitfalls of law enforcement license plate readers in California and safeguards to protect the public by Jonathan Hoffner. You can check that out on the interwebs, and I recommend you do. Jonathan is joining us here on Today's News Talk. And before the break, we were doing a bit of a deep dive there on the dangers of data sharing. Folks, if you don't know what Palantir is all about, you're about a decade behind the curve. You really should be aware of the capability there that just exists in that software, and know that there are corporate versions of it, there are state versions of it, and there are federal versions of it, and they are all over the place, and in many cases, they are interconnected. And in systems like that, this is just a fact of being a 21st century man or woman, in systems like that, they can and do have 3 and 4 and 5 and maybe 10 dimensional pictures of what your life is, what your mind is, what your heart is, what your soul is, what your physical location is, everything about you. And it's not just you, it's me, it's our guest, it's all of us. The only people that are excluded from these things, well, I don't know, maybe they're in maybe they're Ghislaine Maxwell's customers, I'm not sure. But so these softwares, these technologies are real, these fusion centers are real, they do aggregate this information. It would be one thing if everything was above board and we were just doing binge and purge data here, I would say, Jonathan, we wouldn't be having this conversation if they would follow the rules of privacy, if they would be constitutional in their data sharing, and if they would maybe lock those systems down to just involving their state where they have jurisdiction, not having these widespread databases that are pulling duplicate license plates out of other states and stuff. And, you know, this does create a real landscape of fusion center hell. I think, you know, when you really start peeling the layers back, which you've done really well for us, you know, the corporate access to privately identifiable information, you were talking about officers retaining access to these databases after they're done, which means that should there be an unscrupulous one out there who does that? And, you know, just by virtue of logging into it after your employment, you are unscrupulous, even if you're just trying to see where your ex-wife was last night or something like that. That is illegal. It's unscrupulous. And then you talked about unsecure networks. That really gets my hackles up as someone who's had to accredit machines to be, you know, used in operational zones. So, and you were starting to talk about law enforcement's poor record of data protection there before we had to take a break. So I'm curious where you want to take us with this from here, because there's really a lot of offshoots one can take from this. You know, I didn't realize we were going to be talking NSA fusion centers and all that, but I'm really glad that that's where this has gone, because it's a big it's bigger than most people would think.
Right. And you mentioned, you know, stalking people. That has totally happened. Like, because when you have, you know, widespread access to a certain person's every move and their travel patterns, you can go stalk people. So one of the things that I mentioned in the paper is how a few officers, they were stalking another officer in a different department. They accessed her record something like 425 times. There's been officers who have used this to track ex-wives or ex-girlfriends, you know, all sorts of things like that. But yeah, just going back to your other question of just general data sharing, you know, police, and to their credit, you know, I'm not saying that ALPRs can't be helpful to police and that there's not a legitimate reason to try and pursue this type of technology, given certain safeguards. But, you know, one of the things that they say is like, well, we need to share the data because cars obviously drive into and out of jurisdictions. So I can drive from California to New York. Obviously, you know, some state in between might have an interest in, you know, a stolen car registry from California so they could identify the car elsewhere. But then you kind of pick this apart and then you see it doesn't really all make sense. For example, California and Hawaii share license plate data. Like, cars aren't driving from California to Hawaii. Like, that just doesn't happen. You know, you have a lot of cities in California. So California has kind of sanctuary laws where you're not allowed to give certain information to, you know, federal agencies that are hoping to enforce immigration laws. Police departments skirt that all the time. They just say, okay, we'll give it to this third party, or we have a data sharing arrangement. So technically they're not effectively enforcing the immigration law themselves, but they're handing over the data to whoever, you know, not saying
it's just a happy coincidence that we're all in the same database, guys, just uploading it to the shared database, like that kind of operation.
Yeah. And, you know, not to say anything about sanctuary cities, but, you know, there is kind of a Jeffersonian principle here where it's like the local people said, we explicitly reject enforcing federal law on behalf of the federal government. And then you have these in-between people, you know, still siphoning off the data to the federal government. So you have that kind of problem. You know, something with the FBI, there are certain cities that just say like, hey, we're not going to cooperate, or as a policy for our police department, we're not going to automatically turn over data to people like the FBI. Oakland has an ordinance like that. And then in a city council meeting, it comes out, it's like, hey, we actually gave the FBI complete access to all the city's license plate data, even though we have a policy against that. So I think, you know, there's definitely a lot of issues with who has access to it. But like you said, it's really the aggregation of this data. It's one thing if they just see your license plate on the street. Obviously, you don't really have an expectation of privacy over your license plate. But what we're talking about is when you aggregate this, what you're doing is effectively tracking hundreds of millions of Americans without a warrant.
Yeah, and for 5 years, retaining that data for 5 years. And where, I mean, okay, maybe there's a, just to play devil's advocate here, Jonathan, is there a, like a long list of times when the ALPR camera system has, say, stopped a human trafficking event or a kidnapping or stopped violence? Like, are there statistics that support this system, warts and all? I mean, obviously this could be reformed. I mean, you and I could sit down and reform this in an afternoon, just write the new protocols, write the new equipment list, you know, everything would be deleted after a month or whatever is reasonable. And there would be very strict rules about manual, you know, person to eyeball to, you know, make, model, and license plate number, all that, that would be required before, you know, any code three, you know, seven cop cars going code three and coming out guns blazing. Like, that could all be fixed real easily, I would think. So is there something that makes this worthwhile, I guess, is what I'm getting at? Do they have a great benefit?
Yeah, that's what, that's kind of where the rubber meets the road. The costs are very evident. The benefits are unknown, if they exist. I think there's a very credible case to be made that you could help solve crime with ALPRs, but right now we just don't see it. Part of that, I have to admit, is just because of how novel the technology is. And even though it's been around for a few decades, the way that police use them now, are it's only been around for maybe less than 10 years. So researchers haven't really studied this, and it's partly how could they? The police weren't keeping records. No one was really doing public records requests of this. They weren't retaining, you know, numbers of scans for a long time. Those cases were few and far between. There's a few anecdotal success stories with ALPRs. You know, some are like, we found a shooting suspect, or we recovered a series of stolen vehicles. However, there doesn't seem to be any real statistical success for ALPRs in terms of number of scans to can you generate a investigative lead for police? And that's really what we'd like to see in terms of ALPR efficacy is, does this help you locate a suspect? Does it help you locate a witness? Are you recovering a stolen vehicle? Did you spot a stolen vehicle? Things like that would be very helpful. Unfortunately, the correlation between license plate scans and like those investigative leads is statistically irrelevant. There's been a few studies on this issue. The big one came out of George Mason. They have a research center there. And they said that ALPRs weren't effective at deterring crime generally, and they weren't even effective at deterring auto theft or making a distance in recovering stolen vehicles. I believe the Arizona Department of Transportation had a hand, but maybe they didn't, but there was a study that followed the auto theft department in Mesa, Arizona. They did kind of like a randomized trial, which was kind of cool. They added ALPRs, took them out, added them back in, and so forth. They find that it didn't deter vehicle theft either. And then last year, I looked at the city of Piedmont, California, and to their credit, they were probably the most transparent police department for their records, in part because they also wanted to understand what the benefit would be. I analyzed some of their data dating back. They had stolen car data and homicide data and things like that back into 2004. They had their cameras starting in 2013. I looked at it. I couldn't find a statistical, you know, connection between investigative leads and scans or even hits, which is the ALPR actively detecting a car of interest. It couldn't even help with that. So I know that it can help here and there, but it's not a statistical success yet.
Okay. All right. I got to take a quick station break here. We'll come back. We'll do one more short segment and I'll let you go. This is an amazing conversation. There's a lot to think about here, folks. This sounds like a really poor investment. We'll talk about the actual legality of it too when we come back. You're listening to Today's News Talk and we'll be right back.
De-weaponizing weather with reality and perspective.
The Washington Post continues what is an all-out assault on reporting climate and climate change. The fact of the matter is the climate is always changing. Their latest assault is talking about how the crops in the United States this year, because of the very dry conditions in the central part of the United States, have not been as good, especially with tomatoes and corn. Never mind they don't talk about the fertilizer problem, which is directly or indirectly caused by Joe Biden's energy policies, which of course have a domino effect downstream with other things. But the fact of the matter is they completely leave out the last 9 years of great growing conditions in the United States and above normal precipitation. Was that climate change? This is meteorologist Joe Bastardi for TNT Radio, asking you to enjoy the weather. It's the only weather you got.
Using meth taught me everything about freedom, only not like you think. It taught me how easy it is to lose your freedom. If you think meth is taking control of you, ask for help. You have the power to be truly free. I know. I'm Jan, and I'm free from meth.
If you or someone you know is struggling with meth, call 1-800-662-HELP for 24-hour free and confidential treatment referral. Learn more at samhsa.gov/meth.
Democracy is under attack. Western governments are trying to regulate the internet to shut down free speech. The Australian government has partnered with Twitter, Google, Apple, Meta, Facebook, TikTok, and Yahoo to regulate what Australians can and can't say on the internet. Disagree with what government is saying, and you'll be shut down and could face severe penalties. To find out more, go to digi.org.au. Lighting the fuse for freedom. This is TNT Radio.
That's right. We're keeping that fuse lit, carrying that torch over here at Today's News Talk. Thank you for joining us. I'm joined by Jonathan Hoffer, and he's got an amazing article up there. You should check it out. Definitely get out there and check out his article. It's up at independent.org, and it's really worth considering. And it's just one facet, you know, but it's one facet that you have put together, Jonathan, and you've got it all set up here for us. And I think it's a good jumping off point because there's a lot of people that are sort of new to independent media, if you will. People have been turning away from mass media cartel broadcasts and telecasts and internet stations for the last couple of years now because things have just gotten, the narrative just doesn't make sense to them anymore. And they're just trying to find some common sense here. So there's a lot of new topics that people hit on independent news and talk stations like Today's News Talk over here. So this is a great jumping off point. You've done a great piece of research here. So we've got a short segment here, but I'll let you talk about maybe the questionable legality of all this. I mean, obviously we've kind of gone through the technical, the who, what, when, where, why, but how is this legal? Is it legal?
Yeah, well, thank you for those kind words. There's a pretty big constitutional question on whether or not ALPRs are legal. There's no Supreme Court case yet that generally covers ALPRs. The only time ALPRs have come up in a Supreme Court case was in the Van Buren case, which is pretty recent. That has to do with the, I think maybe not the Cybersecurity Act, but it involved an informant bribing a police officer to go track down a woman he said he met at a strip club, but that's another aside. So in 2012, there's a really big case that I believe Scalia wrote the opinion for, and that's United States v. Jones. And in short, in Jones, it was found out that the police cannot, without a warrant, put a GPS tracker on a car. Okay, so flash forward a few more years, then we're at United States v. Carpenter. That's in 2017, I believe. I think in this case, Gorsuch is writing the opinion, and that has to do with tracking individuals with cell site tower data. And the big thing in the Carpenter decision was that the government can't retroactively retrace your steps with location data up to 12 days. When you combine both those together and a few other decisions, what you have is what legal scholars called mosaic theory. And what mosaic theory says that even if individual data points themselves are collected legally. For example, you can obviously see a license plate. It's not illegal to photograph someone's license plate. It's in plain view. There's no invasion of privacy there. However, once you aggregate this and you start tracking people, at that point, it becomes a Fourth Amendment search. This has come up a few instances in lower courts, and every court that this has come up in so far has acknowledged that this argument has legs. However, in all those arguments, they've always sided with the state because either the car was only scanned once or there's only one ALPR camera. So none of those met the criteria for a mosaic. However, in California, where there's a bajillion license plate readers, I think in LA there's almost 500 alone. Piedmont, which I talked about recently, it's 1.7 or 1.9 square miles. It's a very tiny city. They have 39 cameras. It literally covers every street. So in my opinion, there's a credible argument to be made that ALPRs without warrants are broadly unconstitutional, and I think there should be safeguards to automatically purge data after a very short period to ensure that you're protecting both civil liberties, privacy, and you're not creating a Fourth Amendment search.
Yeah, it sounds like we just reached our one of our points there when you and I redesigned this. 12-day. It's got a 12-day purge. You can hold the data for 12 days and no point A to point B scanning. They should also make it, this would be cool, they should make it so that if the camera system snaps a picture, it the rest of the system omits taking further pictures of that car for that day or something like that. It's like, okay, this car was out this day. It checks, you know, there's not a warrant associated with it. There's no need for it to go, you know, Main Street, Market Street, Oak Street, you know, right. Ping, 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 ping. It's like, what a colossal waste. And yeah. as far as the legality goes, we need to I've had a guy on the show, I'm blanking on his name right now, but I'll get him back on again. Maybe I'll try to link you to him, but he's got a setup where citizens can propose legislation. It's basically like a legislation engine that he's got on his website. So maybe we need to introduce legislation that would define this kind of activity as mosaic stalking, if you will, mosaic surveillance, and then disallow it from being used without the kind of parameters that you and I are coming up with here.
Yeah, and I think, you know, just reducing the amount of data that they can hold, or reducing the span of time that they can hold on to data is a huge win, and it doesn't have to compromise you know, police's ability to fight crime at all. You could do both. And, you know, it's very easy for police to whitelist a vehicle too. It's like, hey, this person just shot five people and walked into this car. Actively track this person. Like, you could do that legally. You can get warrants for surveillance. But I don't think the government should be active. Like, we shouldn't have historical records on people's movements and intimate pictures of their lives.
Yeah, that's what social media is for. People are giving that stuff away as it is. You know what I mean? Everywhere they go on Instagram, uploading it, geotag, look what I ate today. I'm here right now. Go rob my house while I'm here having lunch. You know, everybody's giving it away for free. So there's no reason for the government to just be sponging it all up, you know? And I think that there needs to be more clarity. I think because this topic relates to other big data topics, because ultimately what we're talking about here, especially when we get into the Fourth Amendment and the track and trace stuff, is big data and the dangers of big data. And what you're saying here with regard to the cybersecurity not being up to snuff, that's a stop right there. That's nope. You guys got to redo this whole thing. But, you know, I would argue that this needs to be audited all the way up to the point where it's like, all right, we now need server diagrams. I want to see where the data flows. Yep. You know, I want to see the cybersecurity posture on that cloud of machines that are communicating with each other. And that needs to be examined by public cybersecurity professionals, I would say, and constitutional lawyers. But hey, you know, I'm pie in the sky guy. I'm just full of ideas that nobody wants to hear, man. Much like you. You got about 1 minute left, man. I'll give it over to you. Shout out any of your other interests, any of your social media, anywhere you want people to go and follow, and be sure and give them the name of your article and where to find it again.
Yeah, well, thank you for having me again. You can follow my work on independent.org, and I have a profile there. You can follow my other commentaries, articles, research, and so forth.
Thank you, Jonathan. We're gonna put you in the Rolodex, man. I have a feeling you and I may have more interesting discussions moving forward with things to do with privacy and technology and big data, all right?
I love it. I look forward to it.
All right, sounds good. That's Jonathan Hoffer, everybody. And this has been the Brian McLean Show here on Today's News Talk. Thanks for hanging with me today. I knew this was going to be a banger of a show, and it absolutely was. I want to thank all my guests today for joining us. I want to thank TNT, my board operator, all my colleagues over there, everybody at Alternate Current Radio, 21 Wire, all the other hosts over here at TNT. Stay tuned. Get the app. Leave it on 24/7. Listen live and share our stuff on the social medias. And on the interwebs, this is Brian McLean signing out. See you next time.